Welcome to the American Classroom Podcast, where we explore the role of education in building a civil society. We're excited today to have Dr. Janelle Emery with us, who's a gifted and talented teacher at Heritage Academy's Gateway K-8 in Mesa, Queen Creek area. So welcome, Dr. Emery. Glad to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, there's this thing called gifted education that you hear about all the time, and it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. And we're going to explore that. We're going to explore things like what problems is it actually solving? What value is it creating? But before we get into some of those interesting topics, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and how you got into gifted and talented education?
Well, I've been working in education for 10 years. I've been a classroom teacher. I've worked in curriculum. And that's what I was doing before I started gifted education. So I had been a teacher in second grade and fifth grade for a few years. I was a curriculum specialist and assistant director of education for my previous organization for many years. And then I just kind of got this new opportunity to work in gifted education. And I mean, it was exactly that. It was a new opportunity. It was an exciting new challenge. And I knew that it was going to be something different than we had ever done before. So I left what I was doing as an administrator. I went back to school and got my gifted endorsement and gifted and talented education, and was able to create a brand new gifted program that didn't exist before. So it's just been kind of like a whirlwind and a new opportunity for something I haven't done before.
Yeah, that's great. And for our listeners, Dr. Emery's school, the Heritage Academy Gateway K-8, is an affiliate of American Classroom Podcast. And it was fun to see it come together. You've got an amazing school leadership team there with Mrs. Arnold, Mrs. Staggy. And talking about gifted, let's define what that means for some listeners, because it could mean a lot of different things. To some people, it just means enrichment. Some people, it means advancement. But some people, it means projects. Tell me.
Well, I think a lot of our audience, unless you have a gifted child, you may not know the difference between gifted versus like higher academic performance. Like, what does it mean?
Yeah, let's put it in terms.
Talking about when we use the term gifted, it depends on who you ask probably what it means, because there's not a solid definition. But I like to explain that giftedness is a neurodiversity in the way that people learn and process the world. So it's a different way of thinking. I think most people, when they hear gifted, they think it means academically advanced, really good at math, really good at English, really smart in all things, really well behaved. And it doesn't mean any of that. We can have gifted people who are very good at all school subjects, who are very good in everything that they do, but that's not the norm. Just like you would meet a child who could be really good at everything in school, you can meet a gifted child who's really good at school, but you can also meet gifted children who really struggle in school. And it doesn't mean that they're not gifted. It's just gifted means that they see the world differently, they learn differently. And it's just a different way of thinking. So a lot of times gifted education is set up to be an academically advanced program because that's what people expect and that's what people see. Giftedness is not just high academics. It's just a difference in learning, a different way of learning.
I think sometimes when gifted programs are set up, they assume that the learner is gifted in all areas, math, reading, writing, and do you see that is the case, or do you see it's more they're one or two, or what are you seeing in terms of as they enter the program? Any trends?
It could be anything. We have scholars in our program who are gifted in math and English, and they're very good students, and they learn very quickly, and things come easy to them. But then we also have scholars in our program who receive special education for reading or math or writing or behavior, because they think differently in reading in a way that they don't learn as quickly as their peers, but they also learn differently in a way that makes them learn quicker than their peers. So they kind of are on both ends of that academic, spectrum. But just like you would walk into a classroom and see 25 different learning styles from 25 different children, you could walk into a gifted classroom and see 25 different learning styles from 25 different children. We have kids all over who are really great at school and some who really struggle in school. In fact, I just met with parents earlier in the year who their child qualified for gifted, but they were very concerned about him joining because they said he was not really academically advanced. And I said, that's perfect. We don't really cater to that here. We don't want to just build a program that is advanced math or advanced English, because we know that's not all gifted children. We want to cater to their unique learning style and help them learn in the way that works best for them, because they do think differently. So we want to provide them with opportunities to think differently.
Yeah, that's interesting, because when we think of a gifted program, it's typically in the context of an academic setting.
Yeah.
There's certainly gifted people that are gifted in a context of maybe a mechanical setting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily academic, text-based, or problem-based, but they need to go, you know, build something to solve the problem, right?
There are different types of giftedness, too. I think most widely recognized is academic giftedness or overall general intelligence, but then there are also leadership giftedness, creative giftedness. There are different types of giftedness, which just means in that domain, they think differently, they learn differently. And sometimes it's in all areas, but in a lot of times it's not.
My oldest child was tested at a young age for giftedness. Like, she was at a public district school, and I didn't know what the test entailed, but they're like, she needs to be in a gifted program. Shortly after, there was like ongoing bully issues, so we moved her to a small charter school, and they didn't have any support for gifted. So she's never really participated in either a track or pull out program. But it's interesting, you know, when you don't have, and it's your first child, you don't really have anything to compare it to. It was interesting. I was doing an object lesson for kids, showing them how challenging it is to maybe solve a maze in a mirror, do it backward. And I was showing these kids, and it was really difficult. And then I had my daughter try it, and she just went. It was a very complex maze. And I was like, what did you just do? She was like 6, 7, something. And I was shocked. You know, I'd never had her try doing a maze in a mirror. And so just to realize that, like, their brain does work in different ways than we might just assume on a daily basis, or that we can't see unless we're sort of like probing these areas or having them try things. So do you want to kind of describe like what those tests might be like, or evaluation to see if somebody fits into that neurodivergent area?
Yeah, what we use and what the state of Arizona promotes is the COGAT assessment, the cognitive abilities assessment. And it's not an assessment that looks at academic abilities, it's reasoning abilities. So it's more like doing a maze backwards in a mirror. Like, how can you reason with these things? So it's more like, if we show you a pattern of pictures, can you figure out what pattern comes next? Can you reason with shapes? Can you reason with position and figure out what fits? There's different types of reasoning that it measures. It measures qualitative reasoning, which is kind of how do they reason with numbers and patterns and pictures. There's verbal reasoning, so how do they reason with words. And then they also measure nonverbal reasoning, and that's more like the spatial things. How do they reason with spatial? And so that's what we use. And if they score within the gifted range in any of those three areas, we encourage them to join the gifted program, because it just means that clearly they think differently in one or more ways, and the way that they reason with the world and solve problems is different than peers of their same age.
Talk to us about how do you see the value creation process, right? In terms of when they come into the program, how do you see that time in the classroom starting to add value to their particular educational experience?
What we do in our gifted pull-out program is we focus more on things that might be deficient in gifted learners specifically. They might be deficient in other children as well, but things like organizational skills, planning skills, executive functioning skills, where sometimes a gifted child can be really good at organization if they're interested in it, and really terrible at organization when they just don't care. So it's kind of teaching them, this is how you organize in all areas of your life, whether or not you like it. We focus on things like growth mindset, because a lot of gifted children have a hard time with not knowing things. A lot of gifted children, things do come easy for them. So the second they are encountering something that's difficult, they could shut down. because they've never felt that before and it's scary and they don't want to do it. Or we could have children who things are difficult for them. And so they do have to try harder, but that's frustrating and they don't want to. And so they don't really tap into those unique ways of learning because it's challenging. So we focus a lot on growth mindset, like this is how your brain learns. This is why we need to make mistakes. This is why we need challenges. And then we also focus on letting them pursue their interests. What is interesting to them? And then we just go full on that interest. Right now, my scholars are doing service projects. And so they picked something that's interesting to them that they're passionate about, and they built a project all around it. So maybe they were interested in reading, so they're going to go read to a younger class. Maybe they're really passionate about animals, so they are going to volunteer at an animal shelter. And they do a lot of, I kind of call it backdoor academics. We kind of sneak in academic skills through these projects that interest them. They do research. They learn how to do presentations. They learn leadership skills when they go and actually do this project. They have to send emails to communicate with people. They have to share what they learned. So we kind of tap into their unique way of learning by allowing them to learn in whatever way they learn. I don't really put parameters on what they can do. If it's interesting to them and they want to do it, then we try to support that as much as possible. Just because it allows them to have freedom over what they do and allows them to learn in a way that they learn without anybody saying, you have to do it this way, you have to do it that way. So that's what we really focus on. And then, you know, and those skills transfer in the classroom where they learn, okay, this is difficult, but I learned my brain needs this to be difficult. So I'm going to try to power through because I know this is important. So we just teach them things that support them in their classroom.
No, that's neat. Through that process, is there a discovery element where the young person understands, hey, this is my superpower and this is how I use it to solve problems or to learn? And maybe talk a little bit about how they, you know, you have diagnostic tools so you can find it, but how about them? What's the process there where they can learn about their unique abilities?
Yeah, and I hope that is my end goal, is when they leave their time with me, that they learn that they have superpowers and here's how they use their powers for good. I tell parents that all the time. That's really the purpose of the program, is to help them use their powers for good. What I do with my scholars is the first quarter of the year, we just explore different parts of themselves that makes them unique. So we look at, what kind of things are you interested in? What do you want to learn about? Do you like to learn by making hand motions? Do you like to learn by drawing? Do you like to learn by somebody speaking to you? Do you like to learn by watching? I just try to give them many different avenues for them to discover what works for them. And then we use that later on. But we just really take a whole quarter to learn about their character strengths, their interests, their learning styles, their passions, and all of that, just so they can kind of start to understand how their brain works and what works for them. We do talk a little bit about, you know, this is how you got into this program. This is what this score means on your paper. It's kind of confusing, but, you know, this is how we decided you would be good in this program would be good for you. But then we just kind of put it more in kid terms. And what we focus on a lot at the beginning of the year is teaching them what gifted means, because their parents sometimes don't know. So they could come into this program thinking that gifted means I'm the smartest kid in the room, when it's just not always the case. So we take a lot of time talking about that gifted just means you learn differently. You think differently. You see the world differently. And you need help in learning because of the way you learn differently. And this class is going to help you learn how you learn. So that what I want is them to be autonomous gifted learners. So they know how they learn. And then they take the initiative to continue pushing themselves to do more, to learn more in a way that works for them.
I love that you focus on growth mindset, because I think for a lot of the students, it can be challenging to be in maybe a more typical classroom and the way they're learning, and that you focus on, like, how do you learn best, so that they're aware of that. So when there is a challenge in the classroom, they can understand, oh, this is because my brain works a little bit different. Maybe they could advocate for themselves in the classroom with the teacher. Like, can I mold something for this project instead of write an essay, you know, something like that. So that's really neat.
And we do that at the beginning of the year, too. I have them tell me, how do you feel you do in math? How do you feel you do in writing? How do you feel you do in reading? Is it too easy, too hard, or just right? And then I share that with teachers and say, you know, these scholars feel like reading is too easy for them. These scholars feel like math is too hard for them. And I do try to encourage the scholars to say, you know, this math is really too easy for me. Are you okay if I do something else? Are you okay if I show my learning in a different way? And I give them options for that. If they tell me something's too easy for me, I'll give them kind of extensions or different ways to do what they're doing in class. And really, I really try to put it on them to say, you know, this is really too easy for me. I know how to do this already. Can I do something else? Because that's an important part is I think a lot of times teachers think this person's getting 100% on all the tests, so they're good to go. I don't need to do anything different with them. When really, if they're getting 100% on all the tests, they're not really learning anything because they already know it. So it's really important for kids to be able to say, I already know how to do this. Can I try something else or can I do something a little differently?
Can you share a story or moment in your career that like highlights the importance of supporting gifted and talented students?
Yeah, my very first year of teaching, I taught second grade. And of course, coming in as a new teacher, you don't really know what it's like to be a teacher coming into your first year. It's just kind of like a whirlwind. But I had this student in second grade where one time we were doing a time math lesson. And he very quickly told me how many seconds were in an hour. And I said, how did you know that? And he rattled off this obscure way that he had figured it out in his head almost instantly that even I had a hard time following because he was just like, I did this and this and this and this and this. And I was like, this child should not be doing second grade math. This is not helpful for him. He clearly knows how to do it and more. And so I got permission from my principal to push him on to third grade math. And I said, I'll teach him the math lessons. But he should not be doing this second grade math. He's not learning anything. He's teaching other kids other things. So he needs to do more. And so I was able to get him to kind of do some math that was a little bit more challenging for him that kind of met his level. And then I moved up to fifth grade a few years later, and that same group of kids was coming up. And so I went to my principal and I said, please give me that kid back. I want to be his teacher again. I want to be able to challenge him. I want to experience school with him because he just thinks in a way that is so unique. And I just love that. I love seeing that kind of thinking go on. I did get him again in fifth grade. And so we did the same thing. I said, he should not be doing fifth grade math. Can we do more for him? And so we kind of got him on his own little program to do his own math. And we worked out a system where he could just kind of go at his own pace because you clearly just talking to him for 5 minutes about something that had to do with numbers and you would see that what is typical for kids his age was not typical for him.
So do you think parents, when they see that in their child, if they see that, should they go to the school and ask them to be tested? And do you think that maybe that child had gifts in math? Do you think that expresses itself in other areas of life that parents could pick up on and maybe think, oh, I should consider this for my child?
Yeah, I think sometimes parents can definitely see that where teachers may not. We, in our younger grades, our kinder, first and second grades, we don't actually test them. We just kind of do a very small, low-level program where it's teacher recommendation. And a teacher came to me and said, a parent has said she sees some of these things in her son. Can we have him join? I don't know that I really see that, but can we have him join? And I said, absolutely. And then at the end of second grade, when we tested them all, he did qualify for gifted. And she was like, well, his mom was right. A lot of times parents can see that because they just see their kids differently. They see them in different situations. Maybe they see them at home playing with blocks and the things they're doing with spatial things is not typical. Maybe they're playing a game and the way that they can add up their score is not typical. And they see those things where teachers might not. And so, yes, if a parent sees and says, I think my child thinks differently, absolutely talk to the school. But what's tricky is a lot of times parents think if their child is good at school, they're gifted. And that's not the case. We can have children who get all A's, but it doesn't mean that they think in a unique way. It just means that they're good at school and they're blessed with the ability to think and learn easily. But I mean, you never know unless you ask, right? So if parents feel like their child
it's still a gift, yeah.
What's that?
Is it still a gift?
Yeah, it's still a gift. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, if your child can learn easily, absolutely, that is a gift. But whether or not they fall into that gifted term, you know, it kind of depends. And it depends on the school. Schools have the ability to set up their program however they want. And I know some schools do it. If they are high scoring in math, they'll put them in a math gifted program because schools have the ability to set those up how they want them to.
This episode is sponsored by The Art of Josh Nelson. Josh provides wholesome, positively inspiring wall art for homes, as well as custom designs for everything from family art to board games to card games. You can see posters available to purchase by visiting theartofjoshnelson.com.
And Lindsay, I'm glad you asked that because our listeners are parents who may have a question about what should I do if I suspect that I have a child with gifted abilities. And so thanks for doing that. I wanted to ask a similar question, though, but in terms of what would you say to school leaders that want to put a gifted program together and they open this window called gifted education and they see this whole thing and sometimes it's enrichment, sometimes it's advancement. You know, it's like, what have you learned and what would you recommend that a school leader do if they're building a program from scratch? You had that opportunity. What advice would you give?
First, I would start by making sure that the person who's developing the program understands gifted education. I know of so many people who have been put in charge of a gifted program and they weren't given any knowledge of what to do. And so just based on their experience, they said, you know, we're going to do logic puzzles and that's going to be, you know, like our gifted enrichment, or we're going to do projects. And that's great. That's fine. But that's not really, it's not really supporting the needs of that gifted learner. So I think if somebody's starting a program from scratch, it's important to have a really strong understanding of what the gifted needs are and what programs, how you can set up different types of programs, because there are many different types of programs. There is enrichment, there is advancement. And I think it also depends on the students you have. So setting up a program, I think you also have to have a clear understanding of the type of needs at your school. If you have a lot of needs where a child is academically gifted, then if you have a lot of children like that, then your program probably should focus on academic advancement in addition to all of those other social and emotional needs of gifted children. But if you have a wide range of scholars at your school who some of them are academically advanced and some of them are not, it's not fair to only set up a program that caters to the advanced. So I think understanding who your population is, understanding the types of kids at your school is important for knowing what type of program you're able to set up.
It seems to be more, to use a 25-cent term, egalitarian, right? As you go with the thesis that everybody has superpowers, we need to discover those and teach the young person what those mean and how they can use their advantage, whether it's an academic achievement or in personal relationships or work, you know, all these different contexts in life. And to say that the only definition of gifted is those that, you know, score higher on math or reading, you know, that's a pretty narrow view of it. It's more, I suppose, inclusive to assume everybody has a gifted program and let's figure out how you can learn and build on those wonderful skills.
I think some people think that gifted programs are kind of elitist because they view them as you have to be really smart to get in. And that's a problem because, again, some gifted children are really smart and some really struggle in school. So when we define these gifted programs only as being really good at school, I mean, just think of how damaging that is to a child who struggles in school. They're never going to accept that they have unique abilities because they don't fit into this box of being really good at school. And I feel like that's just damaging to them. They're never going to reach their ability because they don't fit what we call this, you know, advanced gifted program, which is why I love that we've been able to do what we do here, because we don't frame it as you're really good at school. We actually frame it as the opposite. You could be really good at school, but maybe you're not, and you're going to be in this program no matter what.
Well, and I think listeners need to remember that there's still significant value outside of gifted programs. I remember when I was in, fourth or fifth grade, maybe, I was going to at a traditional school called Benjamin Franklin, and it was with the Mesa Public Schools in downtown Mesa. And for a couple of weeks, I was in the gifted math program, and it just wasn't clicking with me. And I remember going a couple of years later at the public school junior high I was in, they explained a concept that I really struggled with 2 or 3 years prior. And I was like, man, why didn't he just tell me that? You know, I thought that's where you get the great teaching is in the gifted programs. But over here in the regular seventh grade math program or eighth grade math program, they actually taught it better than in the so-called gifted program. Anyways, and I still actually used that little tool that was given to me in that junior high program in just a regular math, because that's what spoke to me. That just helped my brain click. Maybe everybody else in that gifted math program, you know, got the way he was teaching it, but my brain was wired the way this one was taught. And I use it quite a bit, actually. Interesting concept, but just goes to the point, figure out what speaks to you.
Mm-hmm.
And then build on it.
Yeah. And just understand that. I mean, I tell my kids, your brain just works differently. That's the easiest way to explain it. Your brain just works differently. And it we're going to make sure.
It works the best for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's figure out how you work, how you tick.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's build on those strengths. And plus it gives confidence. Oh, this is how I learn. This is how I think. Or this is how I think about my thinking. Or this is how I process knowledge to, you know, produce something, whether it's a paper or a math problem. And that's a huge piece of discovery, because so much of public education, and I think it's changing a little bit with the school choice movement, is, you know, all, you know, the prior model, the old industrial model, right, is like this, all children are created equal and they all think the same way, so they should all have the same curriculum and they should all sort of not.
You can have the same curriculum, but perhaps it needs to be approached differently with different ways of thinking. And I think that's, like you said, it's really empowering for gifted children to be in a room knowing that all of these people also think differently than I do. And it's not like all of these people are good at math. All of these people are good at ELA. It's just all of these people think differently. I'm not the only one that thinks this way. There are other people who are like this. And giving them the ability to do their own thing and to really hone in on their own learning, because then you see 15 different ways of thinking, but you understand that you're all kind of in the same boat. It's all a different way of thinking. And I think I would hope that that was encouraging to gifted students, that they can know that there are other people who are like them and other people who might not be the best student in the class, but they, you know, they share that kind of uniqueness.
Even outside of gifted and talented, I think I like that concept of kids finding their superpower. You know, even if they're not in this program or this category, I still like the idea if a kid doesn't feel like he's great at certain academic topic subjects, that maybe they're great at making friends, maybe they're great at being a leader in the classroom, you know, that we focus on those things with children and highlight those things on a regular basis. And I feel like that's something parents can do if they're listening to this, and maybe their kid doesn't fall into the gifted and talented, but like, or do these projects, like you'd mentioned, you know, they love to read, so then they can go read at the local shelter with their parents, you know, like find these ways to really enhance their kids' passions and their strengths. And so I just like, I'm like thinking of ways that it can tie into every child.
Yeah, it absolutely can. Those kind of independent projects, because the kids end up learning a lot of academic skills without really realizing that's what they're doing. Because for instance, I have one right now who wants to go volunteer at an animal shelter. And I said, you know, I don't know of any animal shelters that allow children to go in. You might need to change your project. And she's like, no, I already did research at home. I already know where I can go. And I said, oh, okay, that's great. And then a couple of weeks later, we were writing emails. I had them do a proposal and send it to whoever needs it. And I, you know, we were learning how to write email, and the same the same student said, oh, my mom already had me write an email to the animal shelter. And I said, that's great. Like, you can do all sorts of stuff at home. If your child is really interested in something, whether or not they're gifted, if you just feed into that as much as possible, they end up learning a lot of skills that they don't, that they wouldn't get otherwise, or maybe they might be reluctant because they don't like it. They don't like reading, but if they're really interested in snakes and you said, you know, can you teach me about snakes? And they have to go end up reading, they're, you're kind of sneaking those academic skills in and they don't really realize that they're learning things. And that's why I like these independent projects, because we do so many things, but really all they're focused on is I get to learn about dinosaurs, and that's really cool.
That's neat. And I like how the program that you designed is dovetailing in with a really high-performing high school as well, that does cater to, you know, high academic, high learners, a lot of the college-bound scholars in that program. And so I know we're early on in this, that, you know, the Gateway K-8, it's 3 years in and doing great. But it'll be kind of fun to see how, as the pipeline continues through high school.
Yeah, and it's exciting now that, like you said, we're 3 years in. So our elementary scholars are starting to fill our junior high. So we're getting close to the point where we're ready to start building out a solid junior high gifted program, because we have enough scholars to kind of work in that. So it's exciting to see them grow up and move on and know that we're going to be able to continue supporting them, and then see them move on to our high school and figuring out how we can continue to support them as they continue their educational journey.
Does it look different in junior high from your elementary?
I don't know, actually. I think it could look very similar. And if I were running it, I would want it to look very similar, because they don't leave fifth grade and just suddenly know how to organize things. So even though we talk about it in third grade and fourth grade and fifth grade, they still need those kind of unique skills in junior high, maybe even more in junior high. But I would like them to still be able to do things like their independent projects. We call them passion projects, where they get to just really dive into what's interesting to them, which I think we could do at our junior high. But that's something that we're still kind of figuring out, is how to support our junior high scholars who have those unique learning needs.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, so much of education in my mind in some ways looks like a ladder, but it also some way looks like a spiral, you know, just in that the layers and layers and layers. And so what you might discover in third or fourth grade is a superpower or something you have that's great, doesn't mean that there aren't other latent superpowers that you won't discover later on. Some of the same discovery processes will help you find other superpowers that you can use later on, and just creating that virtuous cycle, I guess we could use that good economic term, but it's just that upward spiral of confidence and learning and capability.
And understanding how you can discover those things about yourself. If nobody else is helping you discover those things, how can you discover those things for yourself? So you can continue your upward trajectory rather than just, you know, flatlining through the rest of school.
Yeah. I mean, how many stories have you heard about people that just, you know, zombie their way through school because it's not, maybe their life would have been a little different had they had a good discovery process of what engaged them. Because, you know, these people, once they get out of school or college, you know, they start businesses, they create inventions. I mean, these people are just, they're just a rocket ready to go off. They just need the environment, the fuel going in life. Well, Dr. Emery, thank you. This is a great discussion and a lot more to cover on this. We'd love to have you back sometime and learn a little bit more about your program and the data you're collecting and success stories. But thank you for sharing what you're doing here. Congratulations on a successful program.
I could talk about this forever too. I mean, I'm not one to talk a lot, but I could talk about gifted educational forever because I'm also forever learning things. And so like each new group of kids I get is a different group of kids, and I'm forced to learn different things to support them. Like this group of third graders I have right now is not the same group of third graders I've had in the last 2 years. They're very, very different. And so it just is such a fun experience because I don't ever know what I'm going to get. And it just is, it's exciting. And it's just fun to continue to learn because they are just so unique in in their own little lives. And I love just supporting them in that way.
The only thing I was going to ask is, like, probably not relative to this, but supporting siblings of gifted students. My older sister was like high academic achievement and put into a gifted program. And so I saw her doing all these really cool projects throughout school. Then I was like, oh, that would be so cool. But I had ADD. Well, I still have ADD. So like I was put in the corner of the classroom, like at a desk by myself back in the day when it was like legal to do that. And, you know, because I would distract other kids if I was sitting by them. And luckily I had teachers that would like recognize things and pull me aside and have me help with projects, but I don't really know that it was like explained to me that these are your superpowers. So we're going to use these things to direct you in that way. Instead, it was like, you're a problem child. So
yeah. So go somewhere else.
Go in the corner and go create that thing. So
that's why I also like our program, because we have kids like you, like, you know, where in the classroom they can be seen as difficult or as distracting. And again, maybe it's just because their brains work differently. And if we harness that, then maybe they'll be more successful and be less what we would call a problem. But that's why I love our program, because we have kids like that in our program who are just like, I don't make, like, they stand for the entire 3 hours I have them because they're just bouncing on their feet and they just need to move. But I can do that in here because that's how this classroom is set up, where in the classroom that would be a problem and it would be distracting. And so that's why I love what we do, because we get all sorts of children like that who maybe their brother is really good at school. Everything works, very well behaved. And then, you know, you get to the next child and you know, parents are always like, this one is not like the others. This one is different. But maybe, you know, maybe they're not really. Maybe their superpower is just different than what you typically would see. And we're going to use that. We're going to find who it is.
If you like this episode, please like and share with someone who would find this interesting. We appreciate you listening to the American Classroom Podcast today.
Thank you.